Hey, this is Brandon Ludwig, and you're listening to Beam Me Up, Scotty, starring Kenny Scott Guffey, Brian Labuda, Dawson Maiman, and Trevor Lasur.
Please welcome author C.S. James. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about Goosebumps and becoming a fan back in the day.
Okay.
So tell me about that.
Well, I was actually going to ask you first, because your story is probably much shorter than mine is, because I'm very long-winded when it comes to this. So why don't you tell me your impression of Goosebumps and how that started?
Okay, well, I think, I remember I walked into a Rite Aid with my dad, and they had, you know, some books there, right there near the front door as you walk in. And the two books that I saw that caught my interest were Goosebumps books, and I bought both of them that were there, and one of them was The Haunted Mask 2 and A Night in Terror Tower. And I had not yet read the first Haunted Mask, and yet I still dove into the second one. But, you know, really, you didn't really have to read the first one to understand the second one, so I guess I lucked out with that. But I enjoyed them, and then from there on, I was just hooked. I just really wanted, you know, each week I was grabbing a new Goosebumps book, it seemed like, you know, and I would read them in a day. It would take me like one day to read the book. And then I was really sad and disappointed until I got my next one.
I think it's so funny because Goosebumps is notorious for basically you can pick up any single book in the series and read it and feel like you're not being left out of anything. Like it's, you know, each story is kind of like its own standalone thing. But you somehow managed to find the one book out of maybe like 62 that you have to read the first one.
Yeah.
I but know, it still right? worked out. So,
what were the odds? But I end up liking the second one better than the first one. I guess because it was more about a guy and I could relate to it more because I was like, I don't know, 10?
Okay, I get that.
10 or something? I don't know. But but yeah, I mean, I loved it. And then the TV show came out and it was just, it was game on from there. I love the TV show. You know, I've even got some of those on DVD as an adult. I've got them, you know, I'm waiting to introduce Delilah to them.
And what's funny is, you know, most people, when it comes to books and TV or movie adaptations, most people will say the book is better. I think The Haunted Mask is one of the few where I really do love the book, but I think the episode is even better than the book. I think everything that's wrong with the book, the TV episode actually fixed it.
I would back you up on that. I see that, totally. It gave me a very, it had a very creepy vibe to it. The whole mask shop and the masks in general. And, you know, just, yeah, I would back you up on that 100%.
Yeah, and like Carly Beth's meltdown after like she's teased for the last time and she goes home and she just has this like almost maniacal laughing fit while she shreds this duck costume. Like, that's not even in the book. And that, to me, is what I think of first when I think of The Haunted Mask, is her just having that meltdown of, like, I'm done with this, I've gone psychotic, and now I'm going to get my revenge. And I love it so much.
I completely forgot about that moment until you just brought it up, and it gave me, like, goosebumps.
There you go.
It totally brought back those feels. So I'm gonna have to watch that again. I think we've got that one. I'm not sure. We've got a bunch of them. We've got like,
I think it's on Netflix. Actually, the whole series is
probably. But you know, I don't have Netflix at the moment. They don't have anything for me. I canceled. We've got every single streaming service. And I told Tiffany, I'm like, look, I'm not gonna pay for any more of these streaming services. I can't do it. You know, we're basically paying for cable again. We've got many things and. It was like, okay, should we get Discovery Plus? And I'm like, okay, but something's got to go. And always, always, if something's got to go, I'm looking at Netflix. Because I'm like, look, you guys offer nothing for me. except not even independent horror films. I mean, like, you guys got, like, you know, shot on an iPhone backyard horror films. So, yeah, like, Netflix is the first on the chopping block if something's got to go.
That's very true. Even their original programming, to me anyway, is not as good as it used to be.
I agree. It used to be really good, and it seems like now they just kind of rely on their original programming as almost like a crutch. They're not really so concerned about the library that they license from, you know, studios and whatnot. They're more concerned with their original programming. And then they'll get a great show, and they'll get everybody addicted to it, and then after the third season, they axe it every time.
Yep, pretty much.
I'm not a Netflix fan, and I've made it no secret. I'm just not. And also, too, as a collector, you know, I've got to have the hard copy. I have a digital collection, and it's somewhat extensive, not near as extensive as, you know, my hard copy collection, but, yeah, I mean, I want to physically own the film.
Yep, I'm the same way, and I'll tell you exactly why, because I don't think it's right that when you purchase something digitally, you don't actually own it. You're basically long extending renting it.
Yes.
I'll never forget that a friend of mine, his name was Steve, he bought a Kindle and he was so excited about, you know, purchasing books for it at a much lower cost. And so he bought this book. He was in the middle of reading it on his Kindle. He put it down on his nightstand and he woke up the next day. And I guess they had, like, taken it back and refunded him.
Yeah.
And he was just like, to me, that's the equivalent of somebody walking into your house, taking the book off your nightstand and walking out of your house. Like, right? You just don't do that.
Right.
You know, and then on top of that, the thing that bothers me about all of this, like, digital programming is, let's say, you know, you buy Hulu, okay? You buy the cheapest version of Hulu that there is. So, of course, you get these advertisements.
Yeah.
Well, you're actually not saving money, because then what happens is your internet provider is now giving you a cap on how much data you can use. So once you meet that cap, playing these advertisements, they charge you an extra $10 to extend it, and then you're adding another $10 to extend it from there. So pretty soon, if you had just bought the ad-free version of it, you actually would have spent less than paying your internet provider for more usage.
Right.
So it's like you just can't win. And that's the thing I don't like, is like, if there is a thunderstorm and I got to watch something on my laptop because there's no power, there's no internet, I have a physical library that I can turn to. I've got Blu-rays. I've got DVDs.
Yes.
Put it on and I'm good. You know,
yes.
Meanwhile, the rest of you are like, well, I can't access my iTunes. Well, that's too bad, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It's like, I really want to watch this film, but, you know, it's not available anywhere, or I can't watch it because it keeps buffering because I have Windstream and
right.
I can't enjoy it. And it's like, yeah. Should have kept your library. Should have. I know I did, and I will. I will continue to. I mean, I buy certain things on digital, but honestly, most of the stuff I buy on digital, I already own, and I'm just kind of like backing it up on digital. I guess I could be wasting money. I don't know. But, you know, to me, I'm like, okay, I've got the physical copy and I've got the digital copy. I've got both. If something happens to the digital copy, I've still got the physical copy. And
yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, I like the transporting aspect of it. Like, let's say you have like an Apple TV and you just want to take that with you on a road trip or going to a friend's house, and you've got that whole library, you know, with you. But
yeah,
just,
that I like.
Yeah, I mean, that part is convenient and that's cool. But just for me, there is nothing like that Blockbuster feeling of just looking through a shelf of just movie after movie.
Yes.
And making that selection. And yeah, there's nothing like it.
I think the country started to go downhill when we lost video stores.
Oh, for sure.
Anyway, go ahead. Tell me about Goosebumps.
Okay. So I think a part of me has always been kind of fascinated and challenged by horror because, okay, as a kid, I was probably like 3 or 4. Do you remember those old Disney Channel, not Disney Channel, the Disney sing-along VHS tapes?
Yes,
that came
the sing-along
out, and they would have all this stuff from like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King.
Okay. Yeah.
There was one tape in particular that I used to watch over and over again, and it was the one about Disneyland. And so it basically follows these two kids as they go into the park and they do like Main Street, and then they're getting on all the thrill rides and then the fantasy rides, and they're eating all the food. And I'll never forget, there was one segment of it that I literally just could not watch. I was so terrified of it. And I remember like watching it, just a little bit of it with my mom, and just seeing and hearing how amazingly terrifying it was. I couldn't bring myself to watch it. And it was the part where the kids go to the Haunted Mansion. And so, you know, being 3 or 4 years old, I was watching this, and it kind of follows the girl. The girl walks up to the gates, and it's still daytime, and she's just kind of looking up at this foreboding mansion. And it kind of does one of those like hazy transitions where she's like, I wonder what happens here at night. And so then you like get inside this girl's mind as she's imagining what happens at night. And next thing you know, there's like trees dancing in the yard and all these like famous villains doing this like double take by the front porch and just really sick shit, right? So I could not watch this, and it terrified me for the longest time. Well, I remember I put it on one day because I really loved the zippity-doo-dah roller coaster segment. And it got through that, and then it got to Winnie the Pooh. And when it got to the Winnie the Pooh segment, that was my cue. That was like, okay, shit's about to hit the fan. I need to find my mom. I need to find the power button, something. So I remember looking over, and my mom was gone, because I remember she was like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be a minute. And I feel like she did this on purpose in hindsight, but she left, so I was alone in the room. I'm like 3 or 4. I cannot figure out how to program this VCR, you know, TV, nothing. And the segment starts. So a lot of people are like, well, why didn't you just like close your eyes or turn away, plug your ears, leave the room? I'm like, no, like I had to make sure they stayed in the TV. Like they were not about to leave that TV.
Right.
Like, no, absolutely not. So I stayed there and I watched this whole thing. And by the end of it, I was like exhausted and just fatigued. But at the same time, I was just like overwhelmed and excited. And I was like, this is what like being scared is like. It's like just this roller coaster of emotions. And you just like, once you get to the other side, you just can breathe and relax. And it was just so thrilling to me. And so ever since then, I've just had this like fascination with all things scary.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, partially where Goosebumps comes in. I remember being in some store, and of course they had one of those spiral book racks, and it was all just Goosebumps, and they were up to book, I want to say 32 or 33 by then. Mm-hmm. And I remember in particular seeing the cover of Night of the Living Dummy, and just seeing that cover, it just kind of like I was looking at it, but it was looking back at me. And I was like, something about this, I need to know more about. And so my sister started collecting them. You know, she's a little bit older than me. And so I would kind of just steal the books and not even read them. I would just look at the covers and I would turn it over and read the back of it as best as I could. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she started collecting them. And then once I got to that age where I was reading on that level, I started swiping them from her and then just building my collection that way. So that was really my introduction to Goosebumps.
That's awesome. And you know what movie terrified me when I was a kid? About, you know, 6 or so?
What was it?
Return to Oz. That movie scared the crap out of me. It scared me to death. And because my dad told me, he's like, look, it's a sequel to The Wizard of Oz. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, let's watch it. It was nothing like The Wizard of Oz. And I refused to watch it again until I was like 12. Like, I refused to watch that film again. And it makes me very happy now that I can someday terrify my daughter with it in the future.
Well, honestly, even the first Wizard of Oz is pretty terrifying. I think, you know, every kid had that moment of watching that and just being like, I'm kind of creeped out by this.
Yeah.
Which is really fascinating, because wasn't the lady that played the Wicked Witch, wasn't she like a teacher or something? And she actually loved kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen Return to Oz?
I have not, actually.
You have Disney Plus, right? Watch it. It's on Disney Plus. If anybody else has not seen it, please watch it. It is on Disney Plus. So you actually interviewed R.L. Stine. Did you want to talk about that?
I did. In 2012, I used to review movies and books and things like that for a website called HorrorDNA.com. And I kind of started to drift from it a little bit. I was focusing more on like screenwriting and things like that. And one day I got an email from the administrator, and he was just like, hey, I've got a chance to interview R.L. Stine, and I can't think of anybody else to do this interview but you. And of course, I was just overjoyed. It was like, you know, it was the best thing ever. And he was like, okay, well, it's just going to be like an email interview. So start thinking up some questions, and then you can send those over to me. He'll look at them. He'll, you know, send over his answers, and we'll put it together that way. So I started coming up with a couple questions. And mind you, this was like the 20th anniversary of Goosebumps. And then he was also promoting his new season of The Haunting Hour, as well as his first adult horror novel, Red Rain. So I was hoping that like I would get like some episodes of the new season of The Haunting Hour. I was hoping I would get like the book Red Rain so I could read it in advance and really ask, you know, deep questions about it.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, because literally the next day he was like, hey, actually I lied. It's a phone interview and it's tomorrow. And I was like, huh? What?
Right.
And like immediately just went into like panic mode. I blacked out for a second, and sure enough, you know, I gave him, you know, the information to call me and everything. And the next day my phone rang, and it was a lady on the phone. Hey, this is so-and-so. I'm here with Bob. Are you ready to talk? And I was like, oh, Bob, we're on a first name basis. Okay. So, yeah, that's how the whole thing started. And, you know, I look back on that interview and I know I was so nervous and just fangirling so hard. I don't know if you've ever seen that SpongeBob where SpongeBob meets Kevin, the sea cucumber, and he just kind of like breathes deeply. Like, hi, like that was me trying to interview R.L. Stein. I couldn't breathe.
That's me every time I have a celebrity guest on here.
So I was able to get through it, and you know, it wasn't as bad as I made it out to be in my head. I look back on it and I'm like, okay, it really wasn't that bad, but it just bothered me that a lot of the questions were not as thoroughly researched as I would have liked. But he was super nice. He was so easy to talk to. He has such a great sense of humor, which is, I think, why he writes horror so well. I think when you are extremely uptight about anything scary, it comes across as uptight, you know, and yeah. If you have like a sense of humor about it, it's a little more bearable and it can still creep you out and you know, give you nightmares, but it's that sense of humor that gives you that relief and that volleying emotional roller coaster kind of aspect. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed talking to him, and you know, it's to me a one chance in a lifetime experience, and yeah. I'll never get it again, but I'll always remember it.
He seems like a pretty cool dude. I've actually talked to him about coming on the podcast before, and he didn't say no. He said he had a lot going on and to get back with him eventually. He said, I could either have R.L. Stein or C.S. James, and I chose you. No, I'm kidding. he did say to get back with him, and I have not. He gave me a date which to get back with him. I may need to. I don't know if I'll ever have him on, but, you know, he does seem pretty cool. So
He is. He's very cool.
So when did Twisted Books to Leave You Shook creep into your mind and become something you wanted to do?
So I've always wanted to be a screenwriter. That's the first thing. Like, I never thought about writing books. I'm one of those people where even a TV show intimidates me to start it if I see that it's on like too many seasons. I'm like, oh, yes. This is on season, you know, 14. I'm not even going to try to catch up with this.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with books. If I see a book that's 800 pages, I'm like, who has the time? Who has the patience? Like, I'm not about that life. Whereas screenwriting is very cut and dry. You only write what you see, what you hear. There's no background history. You know, all the characterizations have to be in what they do or what they say. And that's the thing I like about screenwriting is you only get the information that you need. And so I loved writing like that. You know, screenplays just kind of poured out of me. But the problem with screenwriting is you have to get your work in the hands of somebody actually willing to produce it in order for anything to happen with it. So you could literally write the best screenplay of all time, but until it falls into the right hands, it just sits there. And most people who like to read, you know, all these Bookstagram people, they don't read screenplays. Nobody reads screenplays. I mean, I have had people pick me up from the airport before they've read my screenplay. So,
right.
You know, it's just that was the part of screenwriting that I didn't like, is I felt like here's something that I spent so much time on, so much thought went into it, and I'm so proud of it, but it's just sitting there. Nobody is paying attention to it, and nobody knows about this idea that I'm so excited about. So eventually I got tired of waiting for somebody to say yes to me. I was tired of waiting for that approval. And so finally I said, fuck it, I'm going to be my own yes. And I talked to my dad, and my dad was just like, you really need to take a lot of these ideas that you have and do books about it. Like, you could do short stories, you could do like just an anthology, just whatever you want. But you know, these stories that you have are just sitting there and they're great. So do something tangible that is yours, and you promote it and you do your own thing with it. So I was looking at my library and, you know, all the Stephen King hardbacks that I had, and I was just like, I'm not doing that. I ain't got the time for it. And then, of course, I saw my Goosebumps collection, and I was just like, it's funny, you know, this is what made me want to be a writer in the first place. You know, I just absorbed so much of these as a kid, and, you know, this was my whole childhood. And so I started thinking, like, what is out there today that's like Goosebumps, but for this alpha generation of kids? And there's really not a lot, believe it or not. You know, Goosebumps has gone through its own little revival. It's got Horrorland. It's got Hall of Horrors. Slappy World, I think, is the newest one that's out. But for me, and I have read a couple of the newer ones, they're not quite on the same level as the original Goosebumps series. And I'll tell you why. The reason the books are not as strong as they used to be is they kind of rely on what's already been successful. So for example, the Slappy World is really just promoting Slappy. Like, he's kind of just taken over. He's, you know, this ventriloquist dummy that's become the unofficial mascot of the series. And he doesn't really invite new original ideas into the picture. He just kind of like is a formula at this point that just gets repeated over and over in different scenarios.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's still enjoyable, but I remember that original 62 book set of Goosebumps, every single story for the most part was very original. It was almost in a genre of its own even. And, you know, they were all just so exciting and different from each other. And that's what made that first set so magical. And kids today don't really have that. I mean, yes, they have the book still out there if they wanted to grab it and start over. But again, there's kids like me and people like me that see something that has 200 plus books in the series, and they're like, I'm not even going to get started with that. I'm not even going to try. I'm not like paying any attention to that. It's already got its fan base. It doesn't need me.
Right.
And so I thought, like, what could I do for kids today that makes them feel it was made just for them? And so I took a lot of these old story ideas that I had, and I just started outlining a few of them. And I said, I think I could do this. I could make my own homage to Goosebumps in my own way and tell it my way and come up with these new and exciting original stories and characters that these kids feel like this was made for me, and that's why I connect with it.
So give us a quick rundown of the books in the series thus far.
So book one is called Fright Filter, and it's basically my take on body horror, like what happens when our bodies betray us and become something that they're not. So it's basically about a girl named Nicole who has recently lost her father, and she's grieving. She's kind of losing herself to that grief. She doesn't really care about anything anymore. She's falling into a crowd that maybe she doesn't necessarily need to be in. So she's making some poor decisions, and she's very easily influenced by people that she really has no business being associated with. So one day she gets her phone confiscated after she's kind of being peer pressured into posting something mean about another classmate. And when she gets her phone back, she notices that there are filters on her phone that weren't there before. And they're these fun, playful monster filters. And she's just like, oh, this is so cool. I can be a mummy. I can be a vampire. You know, I can be all these things. And so she plays around with them. And then finally she goes to bed. And when she wakes up in the morning, she wakes up as one of these creatures from the phone. And so she kind of has to backpedal a little bit and think, how did this happen? You know, who would do this? And what can I do to get myself out of this situation? So that's really what the first book is about.
Can I just say I love that too, because, you know, it really is a lesson, okay? You keep putting these dog ears and dog noses on you, you're going to wake up like that, right? All right, go ahead.
And the really cool aspect of Twisted Books to Leave You Shook that I'm really proud of is every book actually has a short story at the end of it that's in the same subgenre as the main story that I wrote. And I did this for a couple of reasons. Number one, I really wanted there to be kind of like an appetizer. Well, appetizers before a meal. So more of a dessert that, like, hey, I finished this main story. I enjoyed it. I love this type of like genre, and I want something else about it. So that's where I would bring in somebody else, another writer, to give their take on the story, but a much shorter version. So with Fright Filter, it's obviously about body horror. And so I wanted the short story after that to be in the same body horror genre. So I talked to a writing friend of mine. His name is Sean Elwood. Brilliant writer. He's such a good storyteller. And he came up with his own body horror take about an acne cream that kind of changes this girl's face and her body. And I love that with these books, I'm able to bring in other voices in the genre that are not often heard. You know, that's one thing, you know, I learned from screenwriting is there are so many talented people out there that just don't get a fair shake. And this was my chance to kind of give back to them. Like, hey, I'm doing this for me, but at the same time, I want you guys to have your voice heard too. So having that networking and bringing them in and inviting them in to do this was really important to me.
Oh yeah. That's awesome too, that you do that. Cause I feel like I kind of try to do the same thing. I try to give everybody who's interested in something that like I'm doing, be it the podcast or the films or, you know, a book or whatever, I try to give them their own opportunity to be a part of it. You know, like, for example, in the second book that I'm working on right now, I gave other dads I know the opportunity to submit a paragraph for the book about what being a dad means to them to use in the book. And so, yeah, I'm totally all about that. I try to say that everybody gets a seat at the table, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So any upcoming stories you want to share?
So I've done two books so far. So I've done Fright Filter, and then the second book was Toy Horror Story. I have a third book in the works right now. I really tried to have it done by St. Patrick's Day, but I found that the story was much larger in scope than I was anticipating. But the third book is called Bad Luck Shriek, and it's basically about a world where leprechauns exist, but they're not the leprechauns in the way that we think of leprechauns. They're not Lucky Charms, little green men, you know, walking around. They're more of these creatures that are good luck charms that have been bred and domesticated as house pets. And they say if you purchase one at a very expensive price, you get good luck for life. And so this one girl who's just completely down on her luck, her friend decides, hey, I'm going to cheer her up and turn her life around. I'm going to steal a leprechaun for her to turn, you know, to turn her luck around. And it has kind of consequences that neither one of them are anticipating.
You can't steal the leprechaun. You have to buy it. Technically, you shouldn't even buy them, right? Because they're living things. Oh my God. I cannot wait to read this one. I love it. I think that's awesome, dude. I really do. I mean, even if it's, you know, the middle of the summer, you get it done. Put it out there. That sounds awesome. I like that plot.
Yeah, and that's how I felt about it. You know, I don't like to be rushed into anything. I like to take my time with my stories. I don't want this to be one of those things. You know, at one point, R.L. Stine with his Goosebumps book, he was writing a book a month. Like, every single month, a new book was coming out. And I didn't want it to be so formulaic that, like, I wasn't really giving each story the attention it deserved. And I felt like this story in particular was much larger in scope, like I said, than some of these other stories that are more self-contained. And so I was like, this one's going to take me a little more time, and I'm not going to let a release date have any factor in, you know, me finishing this. Like, I'm just going to do it when, you know, I feel like writing it and it feels like it's coming to me, and let that be it.
Yeah, I've found that with me when I'm working, a, you know, deadline, release date, whatever you want to call it, it's pretty much a day that I'm not going to have it finished by. I've discovered that, you know, I'm not going to be done by that day. If I don't give myself like a time limit, or, you know, if I don't feel constrained, I can probably get it done. But, you know, it's suddenly, you know, it's like I work against myself. I don't know.
Yeah. And I'm also a Leo too. So anytime I'm told to do something, like I have to do something, I do the exact opposite.
Oh my God. No, I do that too. But see, I'm a Virgo now, but I'm my mom is a Leo, and I'm August 28th. Virgo starts August 23rd. So I think, I'm pretty close to being a Leo, you know, as opposed to a Virgo. So I think I got, you know, a little bit of traits of both in there, but yeah, I definitely feel that. But, we are both fans of the film Drop Dead Gorgeous. Any love you want to show to the film right now?
I mean, what could be said about that movie? Like, I'm so glad it's gained this fan base, especially amongst, like, the gays. Like, oh my God, it's such a fun movie. And I remember when it came out, first of all, I didn't even remember that it came out because the advertising for it sucked so bad. And then when it was actually out on DVD, and it was in one of those like snap DVD cases, if you remember.
Actually, that's the one I have. That's the edition that we have.
My sister had it, and it just sat on the shelf. And one day I was so bored, and I was looking through the movies. I was like, whatever, I'll just put this one on. And I put it on. I could not stop laughing at that movie. It's so good and so ahead of its time, and I'm so glad it's getting its due now.
It is, right? And I love movies like that. Those quirky, you know, just they kind of just, you know, show you a reflection of your real life almost, because my family is almost just like that, you know, and I don't know about yours, but you know, where I'm from, you know, like my aunt reminds me of, you know, Loretta in the film. Right. And so, yeah, it's like a microcosm of people that, you know, that you can relate to, in that one film, but it's a great film. But, if I call and I say there's an emergency at the trailer park, what's that code for you to do?
What's the full quote? Pick up a pack of Luckies. What's the full quote? You probably know it by heart better than I do.
He says, Amber, there's some kind of emergency at the trailer park. She says, relax. It's just my mom's cue to bring home milk and a carton of Luckies, maybe?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, so where can we find Twisted Books to leave you shook?
You can find Twisted Books to Leave You Shook on Facebook and Instagram at Twisted Books to Leave You Shook.
Fantastic. All right. And I guess we'll leave it there, buddy. And anything you want to say, any last words or anything before you go?
Just thank you for having me. Thank you for supporting this crazy endeavor of mine. I did not think anybody would actually read this stuff because I'm so used to like the screenwriting thing and my stuff just sitting for a long time unnoticed. So it's been really cool just being able to write something and put it out there and people actually respond to it and get opportunities like this, doing a podcast. I never dreamed when I started this that I would be doing this kind of stuff. So thank you very much.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how's it going?
It's been a full day. How about you?
Yeah, it really has.
Glad to hear it's not just me. You know what I had for dinner?
What?
A blizzard from Dairy Queen.
That's a good dinner.
Yeah, that's what kind of a day I've been having. So
yeah.
Yeah. What's up? What's new? Anything?
Nothing. Just kind of. I didn't answer before because I was going through. So, have you ever heard of Drive Thru Records?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, they had, like, Newfound Glory and Midtown in, like, the early 90s and all that stuff, like, with all, like, that pop-punk stuff.
Yeah.
So, on eBay, I found a bunch of CDs, right?
Yeah.
And the guy was selling, like CD binder booklets, like, 24 CDs for $20.
Oh, that's awesome.
I bought a couple of them, and I was talking to him a little bit, and then when the package came, I saw his name on it, I was like, that name sounds really familiar. So then I like looked it up and it was like the owner of Drive Thru Records. I was talking to him and I bought a couple more CDs. And then yesterday he sent me this huge box full of all of his like CDs.
Wow. That's awesome.
And it says, hey, we're moving. Like, I hope you enjoy this gift. And I was like, awesome. That's like so cool.
That is cool. You know, it's hard to find like legitimately nice people anymore. It really is.
It's
really cool. That is. That's awesome. I know you saw my shirt that came in. I sent that to you, right? My premiere shirt. I went through two different jackets. Like, I never order clothing online, okay? and I said, okay, I will make an exception for, you know, this one time. And all it did was solidify my position that I'm not ordering clothing online. But the shirt, when it came in, was good. The shirt's good. But I went through two different jackets. Actually, I guess technically three because I had to get a third jacket. Third time was the charm with the jackets. But the shirt fit, the first two jackets were just not what they looked like online.
Yeah.
They just were not what I ordered. So, you know. But but I hear, can we mention that you're going to be filming a movie soon?
I have no clue when I'm going to be filming the movie, but I still have to write it. I have a story.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to hear the story.
Do you want the listeners to hear the story?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay, go ahead.
So, you know, the story is, so this is just a very rough story, like an idea. Basically, it's going to be about these two city guys who are single, get away from the city, go upstate, which is where I am, about an hour outside of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these small towns here, and I always wanted to make a movie in a small town. So I thought it'd be kind of weird, you know, to have a town that kind of cannibalizes people.
Ooh.
So they have a special machine that's obviously made up because this does not happen in real life where the machine can kill your engine. So your car stalls when you enter within the city.
Within the city limits, right?
Within the town that they're in. And they walk in, they meet the sheriff at a bar and the mechanic. The mechanic's like, oh, I'll take your car in. You know, takes the car, and the sheriff's like, oh, well, we'll put you up at someone's house. I know an old lady out in the woods who, you know, has her own, like, place. She'll gladly put you up, right? So the two guys go there. They find that there's some other people there, too, with the same exact thing happened to them, right?
Right.
Long story short, I want to have basically the town is cannibalizing them for food. And that's what the town does. That's how the town sustains themselves. Is by cannibalizing these people.
I love it. I cannot wait to see this when you get this done. Like, I'm so excited. Yeah, like you said, you don't know when it'll be, right? But hopefully soon, because...
Yeah, I mean, I gotta raise money, you know?
Yeah.
Somehow. I think I'm gonna do a GoFundMe.
We can talk about that.
Or something.
Yeah, we'll get something going, you know, and get something off the ground. You know me, I'm always down for film. I love film.
Awesome. And the coolest thing is that so my uncles, their father, my grandfather's brother, built these, like, they bought this plot of land in like the 50s out in this place called Wurzburgo, which is a little bit, you know, maybe like 40 minutes from where I live now.
Mm-hmm.
And they built these huge, like, houses. They're almost like castles. They're like literal castles.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Out in the woods. And I was like sitting there on Easter and I was like, this would be a great fucking place for a movie. And then when, like, I came up with that whole entire idea, which I had kind of a rough idea of that for a while, but then I was like, this is perfect, you know?
Right.
Because it's in a valley. There's woods on, it's completely in the woods. And the town that's in Wurzburgo, I'll send you some pictures next time I'm there, is basically small town, main street, stores on each side, and that's it.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. That's so cool.
So I'm going to ask him if I could use his house. I figured I'd give him some money, maybe pay him like $2,000 for the house for a week.
Yeah.
On top of paying for whatever electricity is used that week.
Right.
You know,
I can tell it must be like you said, a castle almost, because for me, I'm like, oh, you'll pay me $20 a day. Sure. Whatever, you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, $20 for 2 weeks, you know, sure.
You know? Yes.
I'm good with whatever, you know, film in my house. I don't care.
Yeah. You know,
well, you filmed a movie before though, right? Kettleman's Forest.
Yes, I filmed Kettleman's Forest, and that was like the first time that I actually had a script. And it was like my first time actually like directing like a group of people and like having to get people together. Because when I made movies, I was always in high school, and it was just like, hey, let's hang out, make a movie.
Yeah.
You know, but as you know, when you're an adult, you know, people don't want to take off work for you to make your movie, so you kind of have to plan it around everyone else's schedule, and that was kind of the hardest part with that.
Yeah.
So it was very rushed. I was editing, cameraman, special effects, screenwriter, director, and it was just, you know, a lot.
Yeah, you did a lot on it, and you're absolutely correct too. I mean, jobs don't seem to understand that too. It's like, I gotta take off, I gotta film this movie, and it's like, that's not acceptable. That is not acceptable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, that's why I wanted to do the GoFundMe, because I figured if I could pay everyone's... So I want to use the GoFundMe for locations, special effects. We already have cinema cameras. My brother has that Da Vinci black whatever camera.
Cool.
That's a cinema camera. And,
right.
You know, I want to pay people, like, whatever they would lose for a week. So I have friends who work at Best Buy who might be in the movie. You know, they make $500 a week. They take off a week. I give them $500.
Right.
So it's like they didn't, you know, and they get to make a movie.
Exactly. See, yeah, and then, that's exciting to me. That's something they'll remember, too, you know?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about your brother? Yeah. Is that his real name?
What? Oh, Jason Statham? No.
I didn't think so. I was like, yeah, because I see sometimes, you know, like when, you know, they, you know, you... Maybe you get tagged or he gets tagged or both of you. You know, I'm like, that cannot be that dude's real name. But sure.
It's funny because, like, his name was Jason. His name is still Jason Statham. Obviously, my name for a while was Brian Reynolds instead of Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, okay. I see.
So,
I
see. You know.
So, I'm leaving my fourth stop for the day, and I still have my fifth one, which isn't going to take long at all, but... Anyways, that's a nice fucking Bronco. It's so beautiful. So is the lady driving it. But anyways, I'm on my way to pick up the pallets out on the back of the Walmart and then head literally right across the road to the Brookshires. And there is a severe tornado watch. I am 45 minutes away from home and it just started sprinkling. So I get to drive home in a tornado.
Yay! Nighttime. A severe thunderstorm was located 10 miles south of Bernice, or 11 miles north of Grand Line.
Lovely! I'm not far from there!
Hazard, 60 miles per hour wind gusts and quarter-size hail. Source,
wind goddamn!
Impact, hail damage to vehicles is expected.
Man, goddamn, goddamn! Not the hail damage, man, not the hail! Oh, fucking talkies, man. I'm choking on talkies.
Scott, I don't know if you're going to get this in time. This is Trevor LeSueur, in case you didn't recognize my voice. I don't know where I am. It's pitch black. I'm in a place. I'm not outside. I'm not wearing a blindfold. I'm only saying that because I would ask, well, hey, are you wearing a blindfold? I'm not wearing a blindfold. Even though some blindfolds could let the light in, it wouldn't be that kind because it's pitch black. The smell is like, it's like a nothing smell. Some would also describe that as smelling hot dogs. I thought I just found a door handle. I didn't find a door handle. It's like a lump on the wall. Maybe there was, it was spackled or something. So that's a lead. Search for places. Google what place near you has been, or near me has been spackled recently. I'm thinking maybe there's a door handle somewhere and it will, open. And, next thing you know, I'll walk into a large game room where the focus is ping pong. That, you know, I played a little bit when I was a teenager. I don't know where I am. It's dark. It's not cold. It's actually pretty damn comfortable in this room. You know what? I'm a little worn out. I think I'm just going to take a nap.
On behalf of Beam Me Up, please visit AntonYelchinFoundation.org. Thank you.